Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Mark Giacobbe, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing Everglades National Park. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Mark a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcription of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Mark Giacobbe about fly fishing Everglades National Park. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 31 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. Before we introduce Mark, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Mark's section there that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form. We'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. Here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question's going to be something Mark and I talk about during the show. And just submit your answer along with your name and your location and the form on our homepage, the same place you can ask questions. And the first person to answer the question correctly wins the $25 gift certificate. And you can redeem that online in their online store or walk right in their shop in Boulder, Colorado and redeem it that way as well. Tonight our guest is Captain Mark Giacobbe. Mark is a full-time professional fly fishing guide working the most remote areas of the Everglades via Flamingo. Flamingo is the point of the spear on the Florida Peninsula and is really no more than an outpost. Flamingo was established for its diverse fishery and its access to remote bodies of water like Whitewater Bay, Florida Bay, Hell's Bay, and the Gulf of Mexico. And the list goes on. Mark prides himself in making sense of this vast fishery for his clients and creating an incredible fly fishing opportunity there for snook, tarpon, redfish, sea trout, and more. Mark, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Hey, Roger. Great to be here.
Good. Good to have you. Got you out of the jungle down there, huh?
Yeah. Heading down there in a couple hours.
Parts of the Everglades are like a jungle, aren't they?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of wilderness. Mark and I were just talking before the show, and I'm going, if you folks want to see where he works out of, if you go to Google Maps and type in, but don't type in, just type in Florida and then zoom down to the bottom of Florida and you'll see a long road coming out of Miami and it ends up in Flamingo. If you actually put Flamingo, Florida, and you end up over in Miami somewhere.
Yeah, if you type in Flamingo Marina.
Okay, Flamingo Marina.
Flamingo will come up.
Okay, good. Flamingo Marina. And then you'll see where we're talking about and possibly can also maybe identify some of the areas that Mark will be talking about. So, lots of questions. New area for me. I've been to Florida many times, but never been to Flamingo or that part of the Everglades. My closest point was up there on Alligator Alley, and I guess the Everglades go all the way up to beyond, north of the Alligator Alley. Is that correct,
Mark? Pretty much. Yeah, starts just south of Lake Okeechobee and works its way all the way down to the end of the Florida Peninsula, excluding the Keys.
excluding the Keys. Yeah, it's kind of a separate area. And really, when you look at the map there, southern Florida, the populated area is all on the east coast there, and the rest is Everglades, basically, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Now, did that happen naturally over there in the Miami area? Was that above ground enough, or did they build that up?
Yeah, they, you know, always tried to encroach west more and more, and I think they're about as far west as they can get now through all various laws and such. But, you know, originally with all the canal systems down here, they tried draining the Everglades and initially wanted to develop it all. And, you know, luckily people came around and stopped that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I know I used to have some relatives in Fort Lauderdale, and literally there the subdevelopments were, you know, they dig canals, pull the coral rock out and make mounds and put the houses on them. And that was on the edge of the Everglades there too, I guess. So now we're talking about a really, really large area, as we just described. You focus primarily on that southern coast, is that correct?
Yeah, the southern tip of mainland Florida, where you'll find flamingo, is where I do the majority of my trips. And it's all within Everglades National Park. Everglades National Park kind of is just south of Tamiami Trail, goes west to about Everglades City. And the park, you know, the water encompasses most of Florida Bay and a good stretch of the Gulf as well. So, yeah, it's a big area. It's 1.2 million acres. So it's a big area. There's several, you know, guys launch out of Chokoloskee, Everglades City, Flamingo, where I go, and various places throughout the Keys.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's accessible from, like, over there by Key Largo, essentially.
Yes. If you go into Florida Bay, just a short distance, you're within a mile or two, you're in the park boundaries.
Okay. Now, can you kind of break down the, and again, we're talking about the park, because the Everglades itself goes north, and there's a bunch of preserves and so forth up there, but we're talking about really at the bottom there where the park is. Kind of break out the park as far as fisheries are concerned.
Sure
there's some kind of designation or boundaries or areas that it's broken up into.
Well, launching out of the Flamingo, you've got several bodies of water, and they're all a little different. You know, right out in front, you have Florida Bay. And that's mostly grass flats and islands and really good red fishing, good tarpon, really good snook fishing. But it's vastly different than the interior, which we call the backcountry, where you've got, you know, all kinds of different bays, Whitewater Bay, Oyster Bay, and connect to Shark River, and that leads you into the Gulf. So it's a little bit deeper water, more mangroves, more creeks, more coves and such.
Now, when you say Shark River, I guess this map isn't detailed enough, but I see a river going due north out of Flamingo. Is that a major waterway to get into Coot Bay there?
That's actually Buttonwood Canal. That was dredged by the Army Corps of Engineers, I believe, in the 50s. And you've got, when you get down to Flamingo, you have two options. You can launch a boat into Florida Bay, or you can launch your boat into Whitewater Bay. And Buttonwood is what leads you into Coot Bay and takes you to Whitewater. So Buttonwood is about almost 3-mile-long canal, the Army dredged, so everybody can kind of launch from one central location.
And so you go to Coot Bay and then north out of there into Whitewater Bay.
Yeah, that takes you to Whitewater Bay, and you can take it all the way out to you
Gulf.
Connect to Oyster Bay, and then you connect to Shark River, and then from River you access the Gulf.
Okay, that's where Shark River is over there. Connects those bays to the Gulf. Okay, gotcha. So that would those be the two major areas, the backcountry in Whitewater Bay area, and then out?
And then you have Florida Bay. And, you know, right. It's some days fishing down there in the summer or in the fall. Some days you'll launch, let's say, in Florida Bay and kind of work your way to the Gulf, either fishing some of the grass flats or maybe poking into Lake Ingram and fishing around there, and you can run all the way up to Gulf North and come back in through the inside and do the whole loop. It's about a 60-mile round trip.
Oh, really? So you can, oh, that's quite a distance. That's, I mean, it looks bigger, farther than that on the map. So like a run from Flamingo over to Lake Ingram is
what? It's about 13, 14 miles.
Oh, okay. Not very far. Okay.
Give you a little scale.
Yeah. So if you're, now, you will take your guests either side then, depending on what kind of fishing that they
want. Yeah, depending on the weather, the tides, the time of year, and type of anglers that I have.
Okay.
And what's been happening, too. That has a lot to do with which area you go into.
Like time of the year, spawning routines, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and just, you know, I'm fishing down there quite a bit, and you kind of get a feel for what's fishing better, and that kind of helps you decide which way you go. Sometimes you can launch in Florida Bay, fish around a little bit, fish some islands close, go back to the marina, put the boat on the trailer, and then launch into Buttonwood and take you into the interior. So you got a lot of options when you fish at a Flamingo.
A lot of variety, yeah. We'll talk about that more later. Now, do you need a fishing license to fish in the park? I mean, you're in salt and you're in freshwater, basically, or brackish, I guess.
Well, yeah, any place you fish in Florida, you'll need a Florida saltwater license if you're fishing saltwater, and then if you're fishing freshwater, you need a freshwater license. So within the park boundaries, you could need both.
Okay. Is Whitewater Bay, is that brackish or considered
that would
salt
be considered or? Saltwater and brackish, yeah.
Okay.
Now, if you're fishing with a guide, 9 times out of 10, you don't need a license.
Oh, really?
Guide will provide a license for the clients.
Oh, okay, for the day or whatever. Or days.
Yes.
Yeah. We have a question from Doug McLean up in Calgary, Canada. And he says, is Everglades Park a place for do-it-yourself fly fishing or tourists, or is it an area where a guide is really essential?
Well, first time down there, you can certainly, you know, there's not, within the park, especially in down at Flamingo, there's not a lot of you know, fishing from the bank or from the shore. There's a few places you can do that. And they do have, they do offer skiff rentals. You can rent a skiff. You're limited in where you can go and power and whatnot. They don't come with a push pole or a trolling motor, so you're kind of limited to anchoring and drifting. That's an option, and they rent canoes and kayaks too.
So
you have options to get out on the water other than fishing off the shore.
What's the reality, though, from a safety standpoint? And I mean, I'm looking at the maze of islands and rivers.
Yeah, it's an intimidating place for the first-time visitor, for sure. But definitely your odds of having fishing success are much better with a guide that frequents the area, but not everybody can afford or has that in their budget to do that, so... Either whatever suits you is, you know, my suggestion is go check it out either way.
Yeah, I know. You know, I always encourage everybody, especially first time, to go with a guide because it's I did one day of that on my own down in the Keys one time and ended up wasting a whole day.
Wading
mud flats. Pardon?
But sometimes that's part of the fun, the discovery, and I certainly understand that.
Yeah. We had a question from Denny in Indianapolis. He says, I'm an avid kayak angler and fish out of a Hobie Outback. Are there any opportunities for kayak anglers to catch snook or tarpon on the fly? Are there guide services for kayak anglers?
In the park where I go in Flamingo, there's plenty of places he could access that are no motor zones, and it would be perfect for him. You've got Perotus Pond, certain times of the year he can access, and you've got Nine Mile Pond, which is no motor zone as well as Perotus. You've got West Lake, which is, it allows outboards up to 6 horsepower. So there's a lot of places that he could go that he won't be competing with skiffs. And if you're going to kayak, that those are the areas you probably want to target. And, yep, there's tarpon and there's snook and all those places.
And what about specific guides for kayak anglers?
On the West Coast, I think in Everglades City, there's some guys that specialize in taking groups out in kayaks. And you know, I think it's more of a group thing than an individual thing. You kind of sign up with a group or you get hooked into with a different group.
Now, where
but,
is...
None that I know of in Flamingo.
Everglades is way north up there, right?
Yeah, it's more on the west side. It'll be northwest of Flamingo.
Yep, see it there. Boy, there's a lot of water down there.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's like one of those places where some of those places have never been fished before, too, the vastness of it. Now, do you need to worry, you know, as far as safety again, do you need to worry about alligators in that area or Whitewater Bay area?
You don't really need to worry about them, but you do need to be aware of them and keep your distance and treat them like you would any other wild animal. You know, you don't want to be getting too close for pictures and stuff, especially if you're in a kayak. You don't have a lot of freeboard. But it shouldn't be a worry. You just need to be aware.
Yeah.
There's no known attacks that I know of within the park. Crocodiles are more tame than alligators. So we do have both crocodiles and gators.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
What are more numerous?
Well, you find more gators as you go north into the backcountry. Where there's more fresh water, and the crocodiles will be in more of the saltier regions, kind of like Florida Bay, Lake Ingram, and that area has a lot of crocodiles.
Okay.
There's sometimes you'll see crocodiles right as you're launching the boat, right there in the basin.
Well, that's cool.
More crocodiles, but occasionally a gator too.
Doug again in Calgary. Yes. Are the weather and tide patterns in Everglades different from those in the Keys, and how does it affect your fishing?
Yeah, out of Flamingo, the tides are more influenced by the Gulf instead of the Atlantic. So, yeah, the tides are totally different. And the weather pattern is probably generally the same, maybe a little bit different pattern in Flamingo versus the Keys. Sometimes a little less windy because we're not bordering the ocean like the Keys. But the tides, you can kind of go off the Gulf tides. And there's varying tide stations that you go by. And you know, when you launch at Buttonwood, the tide you typically go by is Shark River tide. And the time difference is anywhere from 6 to 8 hours later. So you kind of have to do a little math on where you're planning to be and what the tide will be doing.
Does that affect your access by boat?
Not necessarily your access. I mean, you have if you're going to be getting off the beaten path and going into some shallow areas, it could affect it for sure. Florida Bay is a little bit more treacherous with the tide than the inside, the backcountry,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Well, when you talk about a lot more what?
There's a lot more grass flats in Florida Bay that get exposed. A lot more real estate that gets exposed in Florida Bay than in the backcountry like Whitewater Bay and the Gulf.
Okay. Well, we all know, the Keys is well known for winds.
Yeah.
But it seems like maybe over by Flamingo you have so many choices that you could probably get away and get into some sheltered areas pretty easily. Is that true?
Yeah, it's very fishable up to 15 to 20. You can definitely plan a day to stay out of the wind. You've got a lot of places you can hide out of the wind in the back. And typically, the winter fishing, I'm mostly fishing in the back. The fishing gets a little bit better in the winter in the back, and you often have to expect wind. So a lot of times that puts you back there.
Okay. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll dig in and talk more about Everglades National Park. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California, features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call Keeney's Fly Shop at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. Excuse me, folks, I keep having to mute myself out because still remnants of that cold I had a few weeks ago. So let's, Mark, t- tell me a little bit about what's going on in your fly fishing world, about your business and your involvement in fly fishing down there in southern Florida.
Sure. Just fishing down in Flamingo, down there probably, you know, 5-6 days a week. I do a lot of camping. I live, I think it's one way, it's 127 miles. So it's a long way for me. I live up in Boca Raton. So the winter time I do a lot of camping. Just got my truck set up right now with all my camp gear and heading down there for about 5-6 days. So because of the ride, I camped down there. In 2005, we had several hurricanes that came through and kind of just water damaged the lodge and cottages. So there was a place to stay back in 2005, but since then there's just been nothing but camping. And
nobody's rebuilt, huh?
Yeah, they've got, you know, it's been a slow process. You know, most of my guests that come in out of town stay in either Florida City or Homestead, which puts you about 45-50 minute ride down into Flamingo from there. Then I have a lot of people that live in various parts throughout South Florida that just, you know, bite the bullet and go in and out in a day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what you have a website, don't you, where people can learn more about your services?
Yes, it's gladesoutfitters.com.
Gladesoutfitters.com.
Correct.
Okay. Good.
And this time of year, you know, with the weather, you know, January, February, those 2 months are you know, it's hard to the weather pattern. There is no weather pattern. It's changing day to day. So every day we're pretty much doing something different. The winds are changing and switching, and cold fronts are either starting or ending, and or we get a little warm stretch. So every day the fishing's a little different, but the goal is still the same. You're still targeting snook and redfish, and conditions are right, tarpon, and if you're lucky, you know, find some baby tarpon and redfish as well.
Okay, good. Now, usually do day trips, right? Or do you do any backcountry camping as well if a guest wants to do that?
I do have guests that come down and camp with me. I have some coming up this spring that are going to be doing some, you know, they're looking at travel arrangements and what it would cost and stay in a hotel, and some of the more adventurous ones, you know, they opt to camp. And, you know, it's an inexpensive way to stay. It's $16 a night for a campsite. And you eliminate 2 50-minute rides, you know, in and out of the park. So it's an option. Most people don't go that route, but it's certainly an option.
But you don't do any, like, backcountry camping overnight?
No, the logistics of it is pretty tough. They do have, throughout the park, they have, you know, maybe a dozen or more cheekies where boaters go and they take all their camp gear and they camp out on them and they're at their fishing grounds. But it kind of makes it tough. You got to register in person in the morning, so you kind of lose one day of fishing or a morning of fishing doing that, and you got to go set your stuff up to clean the boat out, and then you got to worry about gas and food and whatnot. I don't do really that. I just camp there in Flamingo where I can get gas for the boat each day and ice for the cooler and whatnot.
Yeah. Scott in Colorado, he says, I fished a lot in Pine Island area. The tides there are pretty easy to figure out. There are tide stations all over the place. In the Everglades area, is there a way to figure out what the tides would be from the, and I don't, why don't you pronounce that for me?
From Chokoloski
timetable to backcountry areas around Last Houston and Chevalier?
Yeah, I don't fish that area to give them a specific answer, but it's definitely the tide, as you move into the interior, it definitely the tidal range diminishes somewhat as you go further in, and it gets later. You know, the tide is like a wave. When it comes in, it's just like a wave. It's just going to come in. It's a real slow wave, and it's going to get smaller and smaller. But if he continues to go further into the interior where there are creeks and rivers, he's going to see, the sheeting water coming off the glades too. So I don't have an exact answer for him. It's more experience and observing when you're there to kind of go by. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. On the interior, does the tide really play that big of a role? As it, you know, I know when you're down in the Keys and so forth, you've got water moving through channels, which changes where the fish, congregate.
Yeah, it's not as crucial as the Keys and the shallower flats, but it definitely plays a part and can play a big part. It can, even though the tide is not as pronounced, I've seen it when it stops falling and starts coming in, sometimes the fishing just shuts right down. So, yeah, it definitely plays a part. You want to be aware of, water movement and when it switches.
Mm-hmm. Steve Carpenter in Charlotte, from Charlotte, North Carolina, talks about his previous experiences there, but he says, since Hurricane Wilma permanently closed the lodge at Flamingo in 2005, we've either stayed in Isla Morada or at a cheap motel in Homestead or Florida City. But this spring we were thinking about getting a little more adventurous. Can you give me an idea of what to expect from a little Rabbit Key camping excursion? It's been on my radar for about 10 years, and I think we're finally ready to take the plunge. First of all, where's Rabbit Key camping?
That's in Florida Bay. It's fairly close. It's about the same distance from Flamingo to the Keys. But it's a pretty good little jaunt with a kayak. And my advice to them would be, if the conditions are looking really good, weather and wind-wise, he's got a shot, but he should have an alternative plan if,
Yeah, I don't think he was talking about kayak. He was just talking about camping there, I guess, as a...
Okay, in a skiff.
As a point of, Now, where is that? Is that on the Keys, Rabbit Key?
No, it's kind of in the middle of Florida Bay.
Okay.
It's near a big grass flat.
So it's someplace you need a boat to get to, or?
Yeah, kayak, I think, would be a little tough.
I mean, is it a camping ground that you drive to, or you take a boat to, or?
To be honest with you, I'm really not familiar. I don't fish down there that much to really give him too much advice on that. Some people camp along the beaches off Cape Sable, and, there's several different camping spots, and I'm just not familiar with that one.
Mm-hmm. But if you want to fish the Flamingo area, they should be camping over there, it sounds like, where there's some facilities.
Yeah, I think he might be better served, either camping in Flamingo and having – maybe an option to go camp along the beaches. If the weather's bad, he can just camp there at Flamingo.
Brian in Cincinnati wrote in and he says, I've heard Flip Pallet talk a lot about how the Everglades is being destroyed. And if you want to fish the park, you should do so soon. What do you think about the general health of the Everglades? Is the fishery in trouble?
Well, I mean, Flip's, he's been around a while. He's seen it, generation before me, so he's looking through a different perspective, and I'm sure if I saw it from his perspective, I'd be as concerned as he is. But I do think that the health of the Everglades, it's impacted by the population of South Florida for sure. But there are things that the state is doing. They're raising a portion of Kamehame Trail as we speak. They're doing construction there. The road actually cut the natural sheeting, and they're raising a section to restore that natural flow. And some of the measures the park is doing, I think they're on the right track for improving the area in general. I mean, I'm not a biologist or scientist, so I can't really, expound on it too much.
Well, do you think fishing is good this year as it was last year?
The stook fishing is getting it's coming back strong. There's nothing that man did in January 2010. We got socked with some very cold weather, and we had a bass snook kill, and that was nothing due to man. That was just nature, and that happens that's a cycle. You know, it happens every 10, 20, 30 years. And the snook are rebounding really good. Fish that we thought died are showing up, you know, in places that we hadn't seen them in a couple of years.
Bob in Oxnard, California, wrote in and he says, we hear a lot about invasive species and how they've affected local conditions, usually with damaging results. Has the introduction of peacock bass been a good thing, or has it done damage to the indigenous species?
You know, and I don't think the peacocks had really done any harm. They weren't an invasive species. They were brought in on purpose, so, and that was done on purpose. I've never caught any peacocks in the areas I fish in the park or even in the Everglades and the canals off of Alligator Alley. So they're more in the urban settings, the peacocks, and I think they're a welcome guest with many anglers. They do compete naturally with the native fish, the bass and the panfish and whatnot. The ones that are, you know, invasive are the Oscars and the cichlids. And
the aquarium fish.
Yeah, they do make their way into the park and into the canals off the Alligator Alley and the Everglades, and they compete heavily with the native fish. But again, that cold snap we had in 2010 kind of put those populations in check because there are more tropical fish than what we have here. So they didn't do well when we get those little cold snaps. So Mother Nature has a way of kind of evening the score.
Dealing with that, yeah. Those are all favorite aquarium fish, I know. When I was down in Belize, we were doing some tubing down a jungle river, and it was really interesting because you look over the side and look in the water and see cichlids and stuff that you had at home in the aquarium.
Yeah. Right.
It's kind of cool, yeah. Yeah, seeing them in their natural habitat, it was kind of fun. So the fish that you target in the Everglades from a sport standpoint, what all do you go after there?
Typically, snook is on the menu, redfish, tarpon, whether it be adults or baby tarpon, and sea trout. That would be a backcountry grand slam in a day if you caught all four of those. And then, you know, there's bycatch, ladyfish, jacks, snapper, mackerel. There's triple tail. There's a lot of species. But the big four are snook, tarpon, redfish, and sea trout.
So those are like your four favorites,
yeah,
so to speak? Or is there something that's obscure that's a challenge for you?
I'm sorry, Roger?
Is there something more obscure that's a challenge for you other than those big four?
No, you get bonus fish, like you don't see as often, like a cobia or, every now and then a Goliath grouper. I call them bonus fish.
Mm-hmm.
You're not necessarily targeting them, but they show up on the end of your line.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk more about the fish you're fishing for and how to fish for them down there. So we'll be right back. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure everyone taking a trip leaves a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado, located conveniently on U.S. 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Mark Giacobbe about fly fishing Everglades National Park. If you'd like to ask Mark a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer them, as many of them as possible, on our show tonight. Let's just see. Got a few questions came in here on the Internet, Mark, so I'm going to shoot a few of these at you. Is the fly fishing for snook and tarpon seasonal, or is it fairly consistent year-round? This is from Geraldo in Boise.
Well, there isn't a month in the year where we won't target those fish. It's just, say, this time of year, this is a perfect example. You know, we get cold snaps And when the water temperature gets, you know, vastly below 75, then, you know, big tarpon aren't not on your radar. So there's an example of when you wouldn't spend your time looking for them. But any month of the year you could be targeting them. But there are high seasons for tarpon, especially in the Everglades. I really like March and April. Those are my two favorite months, and certain periods in January and February when we get, you know, these warm spells. And the snook you're gonna target year round. I kind of prefer the winter, or I prefer the late summer, fall, and winter for snook. But again, it's a daily target.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Geraldo also asks here. He says, and we were talking about aquarium fish. He says he's read that introduced species of fish home aquarium releases have become fly fishing targets. How widespread are these populations, and how accessible are they? Do some guides focus on these fish? So have you seen that?
Not so much in the park, but there are a few guides that target peacocks especially. I don't know of too many guides or any guides targeting, you know, Oscars and cichlids, yep. But peacocks are definitely, you know, people enjoy going after them and catching them.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But, again, you know, the snap of 2010 dropped those populations considerably, but they are starting to come back. They are starting to come back.
If you want to share this, can you talk about, Ron wrote in and he asked, how much would a guide cost out there if I'm looking to get into tarpon? I'm planning a trip out there. So can you give a range
sure.
of guide fee, daily fees down there?
Yeah, I think the standard fee right now is $550, and there's some guys probably $600 for the day. You know, if he's going to be on a bay boat with, you know, three or more anglers, it may be $650, but you know, I think the standard rate is $550 for the day.
And is that for one angler or two anglers?
That would be for one or two. And I think,
okay.
You know, I can only take two guests on my boat, but some of the guys with the bigger boats with an extra guest, I think they, after two guests, they add an additional $50.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I know my experience down there for doing some tarpon fishing is that it's kind of tough with two people on the boat. Usually we'll have to, you know, we had to sit one out.
Yeah, you typically take turns, and that's,
yeah.
That's not, you know, with tarpon especially, you're going to be taking turns fly fishing.
Right.
You just take turns on shots, or you go by time. Guides usually let the anglers figure that out, you know. They know when it's time to switch up.
Some of the
fishing that you do here, you can have two guys fly fishing at the same time, but you know, maybe drift fishing or bass fishing would be a good example. You can have two guys fly fishing at the same time.
Jerry Crow, you ask if we got questions about the Tamiami trail canals. No, haven't got your questions, Jerry, so if you want to send them in, we'll see if we can get them answered. Yeah, we're going to talk. Okay, try to keep these on topic. Okay, good. Okay, got most of them off online. There is one, but we're coming up, going to talk about gear and equipment here as well. So, Sam, and getting back to the fish here for a few minutes, Sam in Troy, Ohio, want to know, what's the best species to target the first weeks in June? So if there are some prime targets in June, based upon what you
sure.
already said. Is
I guess it depends if he's in the Keys or fishing the Oceanside Flats. Tarpon is probably still the number one targeted fish with fly anglers in the park, and let's say flamingo. Tarpon can certainly be on the menu. It's a different style. It's not crystal clear flats like you'd see in the ocean, but they can certainly be here in June. But red fishing sometimes is off the radar a little bit with everybody going after tarpon. Red fishing can be excellent in June.
Okay. And then he also asked, what's the best time of year for juvenile tarpon in the mangroves?
I'd say my favorite months are September and October, and I think that's when I've had my best baby tarpon fishing.
And when you're talking baby tarpon, what are we talking about, 8, 10
as
pounds?
As small as they make them, you know, 10 inches to 10 inches.
10 inches?
Yeah, sometimes you catch little guys all the way up
wow.
to 10 pounds, you know, is our typical little baby tarpon fishery, and every now and then you get them in that 10 to 20 pound range, but from little guys to about 6-7 pounds is your average.
Kind of like largemouth bass fishing, huh?
Yeah, they're a blast.
Huh, cool. So are your day trips that you take designed around the species you're targeting, or is it usually a more flexible situation and more determined by, for instance, weather?
Well, it all depends on the client and what they want to do. Some people just want to target tarpon, and that's your day's goal. But I'd say most people are flexible and, you know, a little bit, you know, go after what the day is offering, mm-hmm. what the tides are, what the wind's doing, what the weather's like, what time of year it is, and the tides and at certain times. So it really has to do with the clients and what they want to do.
Okay. So you can go after several different species in one day trip?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
like you said, the Grand Slam or whatever.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times that's the goal, is to get it, you know, catch, you know, a variety of species on fly in a day's time.
Now, are you primarily sight fishing down there?
Again, that depends on a lot of conditions. You know, if you really have a lot of cloud cover and it's windy, so you may not be sight fishing as much. There are places you can. But it depends on the angler's ability, what they want to do. You know, the guys I got tomorrow, they just want to bend a rod, so we probably won't be doing a lot of sight fishing. But it really depends on the style of fishing the angler wants to do and the conditions combined.
Well, do the different species lend themselves to some more to sight fishing in that area?
Yeah. Redfish, they get pretty shallow, so you'll find them in the shallows as well as the snook. And yeah, it really depends on who you have that day and what the tides are doing and the given conditions with the weather. Some days we're sight fishing all day. Some days we won't sight fish at all. Some days you'll do a mix of both as the conditions change.
When you're fishing for tarpon, that area, is it similar to the Keys where you're out looking for a school of fish and fish to that school, or are there more?
It's pretty different. You don't really see them tracking down like you do in the Keys because the oceanside water there is a lot cleaner. You have light bottom. It's fairly easy to see them. In the Everglades, a lot of times you're casting to rolling fish, or if you're fortunate enough, you find some laid-up fish that are floating on the surface, then that's a real visual treat. But a lot of times it's fish that are rolling. They're coming up, they're gulping air, and you see them plain as day, and you kind of cast in that general area.
So that's part of what I was going to ask you, you know, to describe a typical fishing day, how it would go for you with you and your guests down there. You know,
that's pretty varied.
Yeah, you know, pick one.
Okay, well, you make arrangements with your clients where you're going to meet them. Sometimes you meet them down at the boat ramp. Sometimes they drive down with me. Sometimes they're regulars and we live near each other and we'll drive down. But I guess, you know, you launch out of Flamingo, either the Florida Bay or in the back, and you make a plan for the day with the tides, and you go from there. It's kind of a tough question to answer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there is no typical day. I guess the typical is we're going fly fishing.
So, I mean, you go to a particular area looking for redfish, you know, to start the day, or tarpon, or
yeah, I mean,
out in the boat, you see what you see.
Yeah, you know, I could fish there 10 days in a row, and in those 10 days, you can't reproduce any one day. So it's constantly changing. It's a very dynamic place. I guess there really is no typical day. You did the day before, you kind of have to start all over.
Mm-hmm.
The tides, you know, from the day you were there before, there's been four different tides since you were back. So, I mean, the deck gets shuffled quite a bit. And you just have to kind of figure it all out again.
Yeah. Now, Ron wrote in on the Internet here, and he wanted to know about gear and technique. So with this wide and varied possibilities and opportunities you have down there, what do you bring for gear, for rods and line, and do you rig up several different setups? Or?
I mean, it's as varied as the tackle industry, but I'll tell them what I have on my boat. I usually have two 8-weights, one with a floating line, one with an intermediate line, and usually 2 10 weights, one with a floating line and one with an intermediate line. And with those, you know, four rods, you can pretty much target anything you want there.
Okay.
That's my setup.
Okay, okay. And
if
what
you
about...
Wanted,
go ahead.
You could probably get away with an 8-weight floater and bring an intermediate line and maybe be armed with a 10-weight in case he bumps into big tarpon or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about your terminal tackle? How do you rig up for that? Anything special?
Like leaders and such?
Yeah, leaders and tippet or shock tippet.
Well, if he wants to keep it simple, you know, a lot of times I'll just use a straight piece of 25-pound fluorocarbon, you know, 9 feet long. That's kind of standard. A lot of guys do the same thing. You can, you know, if you want to fish class tippet, you can fish, you know, you can buy store-bought leaders maybe down to 12-pound tippet and add, you know, a trace of 25 or 30-pound monofilament or fluorocarbon for a shock leader for, you know, your snook, your redfish, and trout and stuff. And if you're going to be going for bigger tarpon, beef up your class tippet to 16-pound test and have a shock tippet of about 60 pounds.
Okay, good. A couple more questions came in on the Internet here. Joe in New Jersey wrote in and he says, I've had success catching snook in the canals in the park on jigs tipped with shrimp. Shame on you, Joe, for writing this in on a fly fishing show. We're gonna come after you, Joe. Anyway, he says, catching them on the fly has been more challenging. Okay, so Joe's trying anyway. Do you have any suggestions on fly patterns and techniques for catching snook on the fly in deeper water?
Well, I use that. That's when I'll go to my intermediate line and maybe a fly with some weight and a little bit of extra flash in deeper water. And that might get their attention, get it down to them. You know, sometimes getting it down to the fish, even a foot or two makes all the difference. And, you know, competing against a jig with shrimp and a fly is tough. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to catch a lot of times as many fish with the fly, but that's part of the fun. You know, partly a challenge.
And what are some of the flies you use for specifically for snook? Any patterns that you can recommend?
Yeah, I tie most of my own stuff, so there's really no names, but just give some general patterns that would work. You know, seducers, gurglers, clousers. A lot of the Borski patterns are excellent. What else? Deceivers. You know, flies of that nature, and flies that sink at different rates. And most of the, you know, my flies are, I tie on a Gamakatsu stinger hook in a size 2 or 4. I don't have a ton of different sizes I use. You know, one fly can catch, you know, all four species we've been talking about. So you don't need to have it's not like trout fishing where you got to match specific hatches, but you do want to have some glass minnow patterns and such like that in your box, and some shrimp patterns as well.
So yeah, crabs, shrimp, bait fish,
yeah.
Basically, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cut and dry with the patterns, but it's definitely not like trout fishing.
Another question, Jerry Crow in Fort Myers. Says, I fish the canals along the Tamiami Trail for snook and tarpon. I usually use chartreuse and white clouser deep minnows. I've also used Enrico Puglisi's mullet patterns. Do you have any recommendations about flies or colors in the backcountry? Yeah. And then part of the question is, in the backcountry, which tides do you recommend?
Well, falling tide is always preferred. You know, when the tide's dropping out of the mangroves and the bait's got to come out and the water's getting less, that's usually preferred. When you're fishing, you know, coves that are shallow, then sometimes, you know, if you're getting in less than a foot of water, then an incoming tide can bring the fish in. But as a general, you know, falling tide is better.
Okay. So you want to know, do you have any recommendations about flies or colors for the snook and tarpon up Tamiami Trail?
Off Tamiami Trail, I've done a lot of fishing. You know, olive colored or dark brown is a good color. You just not really big flies. You know, small little glades minnows in a size 6 would be a good choice. And that's almost all you need to fish the trail is small glades minnows. That's all I take when I go and fish it.
Okay. Now, when he talks about the Tim, he's talking about just fishing canals off the road there, or do people normally boat through there, or what?
No, there's a canal that runs the whole stretch of Tamiami Trail, the road. They dredged out to raise the road, and there's some stretches over by, you know, Everglades City in that area that they, you know, it's close enough. If you look on a map, it's pretty close to the Gulf, so snook and little tarpon can be frequent in those canals, and they can be brackish, if not almost all salt.
Okay.
So, yeah, you got opportunities for some saltwater fish on foot.
Okay. Well, do you tie any of your flies with weed guards? Is that necessary?
Yeah, most of my flies, not all of them, but most of them I'll add a weed guard. And, you know, if I'm in a situation where we don't need it, sometimes I'll just cut it off. So, I just add them to most of my flies.
Mm-hmm. How do you tie your weed guards on? What's your...
I just take a piece of 20-pound mason, and I stretch out a bunch of them. I cut them to about 2-inch lengths. And I can have, 20 of them set up, and I just grab them, and I take a forceps, and I kind of crimp the end of them, and I just tie them in I don't do a mustache. I just tie one on one side close to the eye of the hook. I crimp a section, slide it down with the thread so it won't leave, and I kind of figure eight it in there.
So you just have one piece of mono going back?
Yeah, just one piece, one little... Sometimes you just want that little piece to keep it out of the grass or bounce it out of a mangrove if you throw it too far back. But too much of a weed guard, you're going to lose some fish.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, we need to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up with Everglades National Park.
Good deal.
Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish for big redfish, spotted sea trout, black drum, as well as a seasonal snook and tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob Jaspers at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051. Or go to his website at www.flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Mark Giacobbe about fly fishing Everglades National Park. If you'd like to ask Mark a question, just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Let's see here, Mark. We got another question. Oh, okay. No. Sorry. I already got that one. Okay. Robert in the Catskills up north. He's going to be returning in the fall of 2013. He asks, where are some of the northern hot spots from the highway, and what flies work best for you in the cooler weather? And I'm not too sure what he's talking about, the northern hot spots
kind of,
from the highway.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Any trail, it's got to be... I would imagine he's talking Tamiami Trail and that area close to Everglades City and Naples, that stretch there is where he's going to encounter, snook and baby tarpon. And, again, small size 6 glades minnows and olive or dark brown work really well.
Right. Same thing we were just talking about there. Okay. Gary O'Connor in Boca Raton.
Yeah, I know Gary.
Okay. He says, I just purchased a few gold spoon flies. Is this a joke?
He was sending in, yes. Let's move on.
Okay, so there's really no gold spoon
Gary
flies.
Okay. he's teasing, I think.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Okay. So you're not going to tell us about these secret gold spoon flies, huh?
I personally don't use them. I'm sure they work.
But Gary probably uses them a lot, right, on his spoon rod? Yeah. Bait casting rod, Gary, or whatever.
Yes, so.
Yeah. So we've still got some time left here. Are there other things you would like to tell us about technique-wise, special things, like maybe we could talk a little bit about particular fish you target and how you might target those, you know, fish for those differently?
Sure.
For instance,
there's snook is one of my favorite. You can target them. You can be blank casting mangroves. You can sight fish them. You can catch them almost anywhere. They get real shallow. But generally just, you know, blind casting shorelines. And oftentimes when you catch a snook, you work that area real slow, and you can catch several of them, and then all of a sudden you're out of them. And then the tarpon, you know, you
Hold on, before you leave the snook, when you're blind casting for those, so you're just doing like a slow retrieve and working a mangrove coastline, is that?
Yeah, it kind of depends on how fast we're moving the boat. You know, you want to stay, I see people tend to cast towards the middle of the boat. You kind of want to cast up ahead of the boat as far as you can cast and, you know, get it as close to the mangroves without getting, you know, fouled in them, is the most important thing, is getting it close to the mangroves where you expect they're holding. They can be holding out in deeper water, too. So you try both, see what's working. But casting ahead of the boat versus in the middle of the boat is probably the best advice I can give.
What's, you know, the usual depth that the, you know, the
you
depth
can be
range?
Fishing anywhere from, you know, 8 inches to 3 or 4 feet. It all depends on the shoreline you're working.
Any tips on keeping them out of the mangroves once you get them hooked up?
Yeah, just keep the reel and rod tip kind of aimed right at the fly and put a, you know, slight bend in it, and that'll give you the most force on pulling them out. A lot of people will try to go high sticking them, and that puts the least amount of pressure. And another thing is, a lot of people will try to put the fish on the reel. That's not always the best advice. You know, just handline them in. You can strip in, you know, 3 or 4 feet of line with one strip versus reeling in inches at a time. So, but keep that reel and rod tip pointed right at the fly, and, you know, pull them off, load to the side.
So I think that's, a lot of people call that down and dirty.
Yeah,
rather than, you get a lot of trout fishermen from out in my part of the country that.
Yeah, you guys are trying to protect light tippets, and
it's
in your DNA. You got.
You see them come down all the time, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Get that rod down. Get that rod down.
Yeah, but you want to, and then you see a lot of them. They set the hook with the rod, and sometimes that works, but you're better off stripping long and till you come tight, and then go to the rod.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a lot of pressure in that rod tip to set the hook, and our hooks are a lot bigger than, you know, size 16 and 18 hooks.
Now,
so yeah, there's always the, you know, a couple things they got to adjust to, and you know, in my line of work, you get a lot of people that come from a trout background. Let's face it, that's the bulk of fly fishing is trout fishing. So naturally, that's going to be a lot of the people coming here to do it.
So when you're fishing for snook primarily, it's are you in the mangroves down there, or are there, you know, we just did a show with up by Fort Myers there, where we're talking about fishing the beach for snook. So it's primarily most of the fishing in the mangroves for snook down in.
Yeah, primarily, but in the come May, we've got Cape Sable. It's a big beach area. It's all white sand, and they'll cruise along the beach there too, just like they do where you were talking about, and we target them that way. Just pulling off the beach maybe 50, 60 feet and looking for fish cruising. They could be, you know, 2 feet from the sand, a foot from the sand.
Right.
So that's another way you can target them.
And at that point,
generally
you get
May, June, July, August.
Summer months for that. Yeah.
Yes.
So how does the tarpon fishing differ from the snook fishing when you're fishing for tarpon?
Well, you know, tarpon, you got places that you'll specifically go to find tarpon, and usually know pretty quick whether they're there or not. If you don't see them rolling or you don't see any laid up, you just kind of rock and roll. You're not going to be probing the mangroves for tarpon like you would snook. And so that's probably the main difference in targeting them, is kind of roll into an area, shut down, start pulling. If they're there, you'll start seeing them.
And so some of that is sight fishing, obviously, but do you do any blind casting for the tarpon, or is it always?
If you're, you know, in a big area and they're rolling around, you know, blind casting's a good idea. But if you see one roll within a, you know, casting range, you just pick it up and reposition.
And what is, we were talking about the Grand Slam there. The other two were redfish and sea trout.
Yeah, sea trout, sure.
Yeah, where are you finding sea trout as far as, you know, the type of water? And
you can find them in all the waters we talked about, but in the back you can, you know, areas where there's a lot of current, areas where there's, it borderlines some grass flats where shrimp might be coming off of it. And generally when you find trout, you'll find a school of them. It can be a lot of fun just, you know, staking out in one spot and, you know, the boat's not moving. It's good for beginners. And when the boat's not moving, they can work the fly a little bit better. When you're moving along, it's a little harder. So it's they're definitely the least challenging of the four.
Okay.
But a lot of fun. Usually in deeper water, you know, 3 to 5 feet deep. They don't get as shallow as snook and redfish. And moving on to redfish, most of the redfish you're going to catch, you're going to sight fish. Every now and then you catch a couple blind casting, but the majority you're catching sight fishing.
Question on the internet: is there any topwater action down there for these?
Yes, on fly I mainly use gurglers, and the snook and baby tarpon respond really well to gurglers, and occasionally redfish and sea trout as well. So you can. I had a guy this fall get a backcountry slam on a gurgler. So it's definitely a good fly at certain times. When the water's comfortable and they're willing to come up, it's not the best fly when the water's cold.
Hmm. And when do you consider water being warm? I mean, what time, May or?
Yeah, the temperature would be like 72 and up. The water's warm enough to maybe, you know, throw a gurgler. But, yeah, the 60s and below.
Something.
Yeah, mid 60 water here, you probably wouldn't use too much top water.
But what months of the year is the water that temperature?
It could be, you know, generally the coldest 2 months is January and February. But the water in December could be that cold. It all depends on what cold fronts we got coming through and how severe they were.
So if he's looking for top water action, would you suggest more of the summer months or when the water's warmer? Or?
Yeah, I would say maybe spring and fall. Summer, sometimes it's too hot, and can maybe early morning in the summer, the first couple hours of light, and then after that it may be done with top water.
Mm-hmm. When we were looking at the map there, and we're looking at, I'm assuming down in the Florida Bay area, that's where we're going to see the tarpon and snook and redfish, but back in Whitewater Bay, are you going to find the same four for the Grand Slam back in Whitewater Bay? Are they all in there too?
Oh, yeah.
They
can all be
okay.
In, absolutely, sure. Almost any body of water there, you could probably, you know, get a, you know, you have all those fish. And different times of the year, some places hold more of one species than the other. It's just a very dynamic place. These fish move around quite a bit. Tarpon can just, show up out of nowhere when the water warms up, and we assume they came from the Gulf. They can, you know, they can be cruising along at, you know, 5 to 6 miles an hour. If they want to get somewhere, they can get there fast.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, I think we've about covered all the questions, folks. Any more questions out there coming in? I'll do a last quick check here. And new coming in there. So is there any, you know, final words, Mark, or you would suggest to people about planning a trip down to the Everglades, things they should think about before they're coming down, or equipment they should bring? Or
yeah.
Any
decide whether or not they, you know, if they're going to stay, you know, there's many places to fish out of the park. You got the Keys, you could stay there, but then you're primarily going to be fishing Florida Bay. I like Flamingo because it gives you the option of fishing Florida Bay, the Gulf, and the backcountry all within, you know, you can fish all of those bodies of water in one day. Or you can access the park from Everglades City or Chokoleskee. So they need to decide where they want to enter and how to go about it. The most remote and least friendly to accommodations is Flamingo. But, you know, 45, 50-minute ride from Florida City is not too bad.
Well, that sometimes makes it good fishing when you get away from
Where
everybody else is, right? Yeah.
Or they can buck up and bring a tent and bring in their food and camp.
Is there any restaurants there or any facilities at all other than the camp?
There is a little restaurant there that you can get food. When you camp, there are showers.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of stay comfortably.
There's a
marina store where you can get ice and beverages and snacks and stuff and sandwiches for the day and whatnot.
Is when your guests come down, do they usually bring their own gear as far as rods and reels, or is that something you can supply?
It's a pretty good mix. A lot of people bring their own tackle, and I always have tackles set up. And most of the time, they don't have their tackle set up, so a lot of times we get to a spot, and I'll pull out my rod, and a lot of times they just wind up using mine versus setting theirs up. So it all, as long as they feel comfortable with it. And then you got some guys that spend a lot of money on their stuff and they want to use it, and rightfully so.
Does one need to stock up on flies before they come down there, or is that something that you and most guides?
No, most of the guides that I know provide all the tackle, everything from flies to leaders to everything.
Yeah, for some of us trout fishermen, that can all be pretty intimidating to try to pull all that together.
That's a bit much. I think just if you're fishing with a guide, then let him provide the flies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Okay, good. All right, let's see. We need to wrap this thing up.
Okay.
Folks, I want you to, and Mark too, stick with me here for a few more minutes.
Sure.
We're going to be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and we're also going to be giving away a $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. So stick with us. We'll be right back and do just that. A mining company called Pac Rim Coal is planning a massive strip mine near Anchorage, Alaska. The Chewitna Coal Project would be the first project in Alaska history to mine directly through salmon habitat, the Chewitna River drainage, 11 miles of it. Critical commercial, sport, and subsistence fishing economies would be permanently destroyed. Pac Rim says it can rebuild a salmon stream, but scientific experts can find no example where successful restoration has occurred after strip mining. Chewitna Coal would be shipped to Asia, leaving Alaska with nothing but devastated habitat and ruined salmon runs. It's time to stop the Chewitna Coal strip mine. For more information about how you can help, go to www.inletkeeper.org. That's www.inletkeeper.org. Just a quick reminder, to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage with a section under tonight's show that says, what do you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave us your comments. I'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away some prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. And if you haven't registered already, then it's too late now, but make sure you do so on our next show so that you have a chance to win one of these prizes. So the first prize we're going to give away is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, and that's always a great organization to be a part of and to support. And we have and if you want to know more about the Federation, if you're not familiar with them, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. And our winner for that is Matt Shaw in Oregon. So congratulations, Matt, on winning that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And our second gift we're going to give away is a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which is an Amato publication. You find out more about the books and magazines that they publish at amatobooks.com, amatobooks.com. And our winner for that is Ronnie Foreman in Louisiana. So Ronnie Foreman in Louisiana, congratulations, Ronnie, and hope you're a fly tyer, and that'll teach you a lot of things about fly tying, so enjoy. And now for our live little Q&A competition here, we are going to pose a question here, and this is for the $25 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And Front Range Anglers is a wonderful fly shop in Boulder, Colorado, one of the premium shops in town. Has been there for, over 30 years. So if you'd like to win this certificate, you got to answer this question. And here's the question. We talked about the Grand Slam down there. Name one fish that wasn't in the Grand Slam that Mark said that you can catch down there. One fish that wasn't. Aha! Steve, too hot on the button there. You didn't let me finish the question. They're sending in, Mark, they're sending in the Grand Slam. And I knew that was going to happen. That was predictable. And sometimes I'm very predictable. Sorry, Joe. Wasn't the Grand Slam. It's one not in the Grand Slam. Oh, Doug, same problem. They'll catch on in a minute. Sea trout is part, Gary, sea trout's part of the Grand Slam, correct, Mark?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, we're still going through these.
I'm sure.
Oh, we might have one here. How about a ladyfish, Mark?
Yeah, that'll work.
That'll work? Okay. Jerry Crow, you just got yourself a $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers. So, Jerry, I have your email address here, so that's all I need, and I will pass that on to Front Range Anglers, and they will send you the information on how to redeem your $25 gift certificate. So, congratulations. I faked you guys all out on that one. It's all those Grand Slams coming in left and right. Finally, I fake these guys out. That's good. Usually they're so quick, they already know the answer before I even ask the question. You know, I'm too predictable. But anyway, well, Mark, hey, thanks for being on the show with us tonight. I appreciate you taking time. Yeah, it was fun, and to get to know a little bit about Southern Florida and the Everglades. And
it's a different place. It's the other fly fishing.
Yeah, the other fly fishing, yeah.
Right.
Well, it'd be nice to get warm and come down there. I just shoveled snow this week, so...
Okay.
So we're still in winter
When it snows like that in other places, we get busy here quick.
Yeah, and for good reason. Well, thanks for being with us, and we enjoyed your company tonight. Hopefully, Hopefully, everyone, you've all found the archive on our website. If you haven't yet, you'll see the links on our homepage and at the bottom of every page. Go ahead and check our archive out. We've got over 160 shows in there right now. You can search things like tarpon, or snook, and Florida, and California, or whatever you want to search for, and find shows on all kinds of subjects that you can learn about fly fishing with. So enjoy the archive and dig in there deep. Our next broadcast will be on March 20th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. On that show, we'll be interviewing Ralph Cutter, and our topic for the show will be Golden Trout of the High Sierra. This is our third attempt at this due to no fault of Ralph's, but one technical difficulties, another I had a terrible cold, so but we're going to have Ralph back, and it's going to happen. So Ralph Cutter, he spent 9 months honeymoon hiking through the Sierra with his new wife, Lisa. Isn't that incredible? Going through nearly every pass and fishing many of the waters. The Sierra Range is the home of the golden trout, California state fish. But it's not easy to fish for them. So listen in to hear Ralph tell us secrets about fly fishing the Sierra for golden trout. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Front Range Anglers, Keeney's Fly Shop, Burro Gorge Anglers, and Flats Time Charters for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company might benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. That's 1-800-985-1673. Extension 8. Don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.